Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carson. Really excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. Today is night one of the NBA draft. Someone had the idea of breaking the NBA draft up into multiple nights. Now, that's what baseball does. That's what football does. It's never been what the NBA does, but tonight is going to be night one of the NBA draft, and tomorrow will be night two of the NBA draft. So we'll see Cooper Flagg come off the board. We'll see VJ Edgecombe come off the board. We'll see Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey. There's a handful of players that are going to be selected tonight, and then we'll repeat the process and do it all again tomorrow. We got a lot of things to get into in today's show. Before we get to it, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan, and I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. You know, it'd be great if you could tell two people to check out the show, but you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. If you could simply tell one person to listen to the show, you know what? I would very much appreciate that. This is where I would like to begin. So yesterday, I don't know, maybe around 12:30, 1 o'clock, the Ticket Fairy came through with a couple of free tickets to go watch the Royals. It's a Tuesday, so you guys know that I like to go out there for the dollar dogs, and I go out to the Royals game. And let me tell you, it was a nice night to be out there. The heat doesn't really bother me that much. I had tickets in the shade. It was dollar hot dogs. I got myself a drink. I was having a really good time out there at the game. And then I realized, oh yeah, I've seen this game before. I went to Jack Caglione Day at the K. It's kind of the same thing. The Royals didn't score. I went to the Cardinals series, and the Royals didn't score in either one of those games. They did win the Sunday game that I had attended, and as I was leaving, I was checking my phone. The Royals are 3-15 in their last 18 games at Kauffman Stadium. And let me tell you that in these games at Kauffman Stadium, the number one problem has been their offense. In the last 18 games that the Royals have played at Kauffman Stadium, they have scored 34 runs. And I began wondering to myself, where did things get so bad with the Royals offense? Let's take a trip down memory lane. We don't even need the harp for this. Last year, in the games prior to the All-Star break, the Royals were 13th offensively. They were not great offensively, but they were slightly above average. The Royals hit 101 home runs last year before the All-Star break, and they had about 160 doubles. This was a team that could hit for a little bit of pop, a little bit of power. The offense wasn't great, but the offense was trending in the right direction. You had a handful of young players and young stars, a developing Bobby Witt Jr. who was turning into a superstar in baseball. You felt good and optimistic about the Royals offense at this time last year. Fast forward to today. Every single team in baseball has scored more than the Kansas City Royals. I know that some of you have questions about Matt Cotraro and how he handles the bullpen, or you have questions about the defense, or question about these things. It doesn't matter if you are 30th in runs scored. You're going to have a lot of nights like yesterday. Sure, they gave up an early home run. They gave up some other runs. But you get this feeling when you watch Royals games, or if you attend Royals games, they give up 2-3 runs in the first 2 to 3 innings. You feel like the deficit is insurmountable. You feel like it's over. That's usually when you start to walk around Kauffman Stadium. That's usually when you go grab yourself a hot dog. You know at that point you were just in it for a nice night. Hey, I'm going to take the little ones out to the little K for a little bit. Let them have a little bit of fun. Maybe I'll go grab a drink while I watch them play. They'll finish playing. They'll tire themselves out. You'll round up the family and you go home. Or when you go take a little cruising around the Royals Hall of Fame, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When the Royals get down early, or when they're playing the Yankees and Aaron Judge hits a home run in the first inning, or last night when they gave up an early 2-run home run, you feel like, well, that's it. How did it get this bad with the Royals? What have I missed? Because a year ago, the Royals offense was competitive. If this year's Royals team had last year's Royals offense, we'd be talking about a team that could be competing for the division, certainly a favorite in the wild card conversation. I mean, I'm looking at the team. There's not a whole lot of turnover. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. was on last year's team. Vinny was here. Mikel Garcia, Salvador Perez. I mean, the core and nucleus of the 2025 team is very similar to the makeup of the 2024 team. This team last year, we didn't have reason to believe that the offense was going to be leaking oil the way that it is. We gave you guys the numbers yesterday. The Royals are now 19-31 against teams that are over 500. The Royals have 12 consecutive games against teams that are over 500. We've been talking about this for quite some time, but it certainly feels like a danger zone. Their life bar is flickering. They're 3-15 in their last 18 games at home. They have a losing record in home games. At a minimum, what you're supposed to do is take care of Kauffman Stadium. It's one thing to go on the road. It's one thing to struggle away from your home field. But you can't win home games. You don't score runs in your own park. Now we're talking about firing this guy and firing this guy and changing this lineup. The Royals have played every single chip that they have. Jack Caglione's already here. There's no lineup construction that you believe is going to fix what ails them. They've already called this guy up and got rid of this guy. Every single move that you can suggest for the Royals to do to try to stimulate their offense, aside from firing their hitting coach, they've done. If you thought this guy was an anchor in the lineup, they've gotten rid of him. If you wanted the Royals to call up this player, they've done so with Nick Lofton. They've done so with Rave. They've done so with Jack Caglione. There are no more moves to play. This is it. This is the team. It has been a slog offensively. I believe that the Royals are the worst kind of team to cheer for. I'm not talking about character issues or bad guys. I mean, they're a team that doesn't win home games and a team that doesn't score when you decide to spend your money to go out there and watch them. It's one thing to do that when they're on the television. You can just simply turn it off. Go do something else. Hey, babe, let's watch The Bear. Let's watch Love Island. Hey, Timmy, you want to play the Nintendo Switch? You want to go outside in the backyard? You can find something to do when they're on the road and they play like this. We're talking about a team that's asking you to spend money and go out there, and they've scored less than 2 runs on average for the last 3 weeks. The Royals have not won a game at Kauffman Stadium in the month of June. It's the 25th. They haven't won a game this month at Kauffman Stadium. I remember we said a couple of weeks ago that it was rock bottom, and it certainly felt that way with the Royals, right? They lost a series to the White Sox. They had just gotten swept at home by the Athletics. It certainly felt like rock bottom. Man, right now, looking up at every single team in baseball in runs, to be dead last in home runs, to not win a game in the month of June, I mean, at this point, you can say that the Savannah Bananas have scored more runs in June than the Royals are. This is bad. There's really no other way to put it. And their pitching staff, once again, does enough to certainly give you a chance. And the same problem that existed in Game 1 for the Royals is the same problem that they have in Game 79 for this team. They just don't score. They don't give you a reason to believe that the offense is turning around anytime soon. And this is a team that has exhausted almost every single option that they have in trying to fix it with in-house solutions. There are no more in-house solutions. It is either a combination of one of these things. You start firing people to shake things up. You go make a significant move to shake things up. Our guys got to start playing better. Again, the foundation, if we look at a random lineup, and Rob, let's do that on the other side. What was the lineup that the Royals put out there on this date last year? Because I'm guessing it's very, very similar to what they have now. That was a team that was slightly above average on offense. That was a team that could compete. That was an offense that you could make the postseason with. You can't make the playoffs with the worst offense in Major League Baseball. That's just not how things work. We'll continue our Royals conversation coming up on the other side. 913-586-7965. The Royals lose again to the Tampa Bay Rays. They have not won a home game in the month of June. And right now, the Royals currently sit there 30th in offense in all of Major League Baseball. And they are looking to get back on the right side of things, losing 15 of their last 18 games at Kauffman Stadium. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Someone just sent a text into the show. Carrington, why are you so down on the Royals? Aren't you supposed to be positive? I'm simply here just giving you guys the facts. I haven't said anything inaccurate about the Royals. Every team in Major League Baseball has scored more runs than they have this season. The 4th of July is next week. Every team has scored more than they have. The Royals haven't won a game in the month of June. The Savannah Bananas have more wins this month at Kauffman Stadium than the Royals do. They've lost 15 of their last 18 games, and they've scored 34 runs during that stretch. This is the worst kind of team to cheer for. You don't go out to the K expecting an exciting 9-7 game. Sure, maybe the home team doesn't win, but they hit a couple of home runs. They steal some bases. It's a little bit fun. It got you on the edge of your seat. That's not what happens. If the opposing team hits a two-run home run in the first inning, you feel like you might as well start gassing up the car because it's time to go. I've sat out there way too many times watching this team this season to tell you guys anything different. We've been hoping and wishing and praying that the offense is going to turn things around. Based on what? That was one thing to have that opinion whenever it was one thing to have that opinion when we were waiting on Jack Caglione to get here. It was one thing to have that opinion then. Hey, they got this guy down in the minor leagues. He's going to come here. He's going to get here. He's going to change the offense. I was all with you on the sell and the optimism. We've seen him. He's hit 200. I mean, look at their 6, 7, 8, 9. I don't have any confidence in them today scoring a whole lot of runs again. We just kind of find ourselves on this hamster wheel when it comes to the Royals, and currently they sit multiple games under 500. They have a losing record at home. Someone else on the text line 913-586-7965, CDOT, it makes more sense just to not talk about them rather than do this all day. They're a professional baseball team, and this is Sports Talk Radio. There ain't much else to talk about. Chiefs ain't doing nothing. Missouri's not doing nothing. K-State ain't doing nothing. It's not my fault the Royals aren't winning. It's our job to talk about them. That's what they pay me to do. Tell them to get better. So no, avoiding the Royals is not the solution. Telling the team that is trying to get $500 million from the state and try to maneuver city funds to help pay for a stadium, the way that they're playing will be discussed on this show. It ain't good enough. It ain't good enough for me. It ain't good enough for you. It's embarrassing. They're not a good product. They're not a product worth going out to watch. They don't win when you go. And worse than that, they don't score when you go out there. They routinely get beat 2-1, 3-1 at the crib. Yesterday was a very, very winnable game. They just don't score enough runs to realistically give you a chance, and it's been that way since the end of March. Rob, I did notice something yesterday while I was out at the game. This is a positive. I did notice yesterday as I was at the game. I'm walking around, and I look up, and they start doing the kiss cam. You know one thing that does bring everybody together? Maybe you think I'm hard on the Royals, and that's fine. I can live with that. But I did notice one thing that brings everybody together. Whenever they show old people on the kiss cam, there's two things that get everybody unified at Kauffman Stadium. The hot dog derby. You might not even be somebody who eats hot dogs, but everybody gets excited for the hot dog derby. It's just fun to watch the people run around in the nice suits, you know? Just fun to watch. Mustard's having a terrible year, by the way. Mustard has 8 wins at home. Embarrassing year for Mustard. A down year for Mustard. But trust me, Mustard will be back next season. The hot dog derby gets everybody fired up. The other thing that gets people fired up, I don't know why it gets us every single time. I mean, we fall for the same bit every time, and it always warms my spirit. You know, Rob, they'll show like a varying degrees of people. They'll show like the young couple that look like they could be there on their first date. They show the middle-aged couple. They show a lot of other people. You know what gets people fired up every single time? When they show that couple in their 70s and 80s and they're out there just enjoying the night. Yesterday, that was the most exciting part of the game. The most exciting part in the game is when they show the two old people on the kiss cam. Always gets two thumbs up. Always a fan favorite whenever they do that at the game.
I mean, it's like at this point with the Royals, and I get some of the text lines like, you know, they're not worth talking about. They are only 3 games under 500. Like, we have to talk about them. But, man, at this point, when you go to the game at Kauffman, the in-game production is the highlight. The hot dog derby, despite the fact Mustard's getting just walloped, is always an enjoyable experience. The little hat shuffle is an enjoyable experience. You have the MC guy. He brings joy to the stadium. They do a pretty good job with the music. I really enjoyed the kiss cam. You're right. When they show that elderly couple and the people behind them have to tap on the shoulder and say, look, 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 it's you, and they eventually kiss, it always gets a nice, polite round of applause. Those things are still great at the K. The Royals on the field, they don't score, and it just feels like in the third inning it's over, and you get to enjoy all the production and in-game elements. But the old people kissing is, it's a unifying experience.
It just gets you every single time. It really does. It gets you every time. I'm always cheering for them. Someone else says, everyone does love the older ones. No, you're right. I'm telling you. And the thing is with the kiss cam, you know it's coming up every time. It doesn't like catch you off guard. It's not some of the time they have the old people. It's part of the stadium experience. You know, when they do like the honor of folds, when they have, you know, a veteran and you know, everybody stands up and applauds him for his service and thanks him. When they do the Buck O'Neill legacy seat and you get to thank this person for their community involvement. That's part of the stadium experience now. When they show the two old people, when they show the 81-year-old man kissing his 83-year-old wife, they've been married for 61 years. When they show them kissing on the kiss cam, I don't know, it just gets you excited every
single
year.
Are you sad when they don't notice they're on kiss cam, they don't kiss?
No, everybody then kind of gets them, everybody kind of gets their attention.
I feel like there have been a handful of times where like the people around them are trying, hey, look at the camera, look at the camera, look at the camera, and they just, it doesn't connect, and they don't kiss, and it's like the air gets let out of the balloon. You're like, oh, I would have liked that moment.
Someone on the text line said, C-Don, instead of talking about the Royals, you guys could just talk about the Gold Cup and the WNBA. I don't even know what the Gold Cup is, to be completely honest with you. And with that, I'm starting to understand why Cody is taking 2 weeks off in the middle of the baseball season. Just, hey, you know what? Maybe it's out of here. It's starting to make a lot of sense to me why this has happened. I get it. I'm not even mad at it. He saw this offense and was like, hey, you know what, man? I got a lot of family stuff that's coming up. I don't know if I can be there for this. Rob, what's the Gold Cup? Hold on. Isn't it? That has to be something in Mario Kart. I know they got like the Flower Cup and like a Rainbow Road and all, and the Mushroom Cup. What in the hell is the Gold Cup? I know what the World Cup is. I know what the Stanley Cup is. What's the Gold Cup?
The Gold Cup is a small competition among CONCACAF countries that takes part.
It's something fake. It's something made up.
It's basically like America, North America, Central America, and basically some countries in the Caribbean.
So let me get
this
straight.
Have their own tournament.
They came up with something to potentially help the United States feel like they're good at soccer.
They're not going
to
win it. So
okay, I'm just asking though, because that's what it sounds like to me. Hey, you guys can't win the cups that other people care about, but we'll come up with the cup during the summer when people are trying to find things on television to maybe make you feel good about where we are. That's what it describes to me. How many times have they played Mexico so far this year? You know, it's the only country they can beat. They can only beat Mexico.
No Mexico trips yet, but
it's coming though. You know, that's coming. They got Mexico playing 2-3 times.
If they make the finals of the Gold Cup, it'll be against Mexico.
It'll probably be against Mexico. I did see they played like Haiti and Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, it's all part of the Gold Cup. Yeah.
Are they winning against those countries?
Yeah. They took care of business against those countries.
I'm happy to know that the United States is better at soccer than Haiti is.
Costa Rica coming up. And then if they win that one, they got Canada, which is where they'll lose.
I got you. Someone says the money that Inter Miami has made from the Gold Cup is equal to winning like 71 MLS Cups.
So hold on,
for the sport.
That's a different thing. That's the Club World Cup.
I don't know the difference of all this. What are we talking about?
The Gold Cup is for countries. Inter Miami is making a ton of money by playing in the Club World Cup, which is different.
That's a good one.
That's a good one because like it's club teams. Like Chelsea.
Do you think
is
that
in
Inter Miami could beat the United States team?
Probably. I think most club teams would beat country teams, though. Like, if you put Chelsea...
But that's a team in the MLS.
If you were to put Real Madrid up against...
I'm just saying is, do you think Inter Miami, who is in the MLS, do you think they would beat the United States if they played a soccer game?
I think they would probably lose 1-0, but they'd have the best two players in the field.
Okay, I didn't know. I was just asking. So we're not sure if Team USA would win the MLS?
I don't think they would beat Inter Miami. They would probably win the MLS over the course of a season.
I didn't know. I was just asking. I don't know. But I'm just saying that sounds like a problem to me. If you can't beat Inter Miami, how do you expect to beat Brazil? How do you expect to beat France next year or England? It seems like you got way bigger problems than beating up on this MLS team. Some things are going wrong here when it comes to the Gold Cup. When's their next game? Who they got?
They got Costa Rica. I believe it's Saturday.
This feels made up to me.
Costa Rica is on Saturday. So Gold Cup, yeah, Costa Rica Saturday. If they win that one, then the semifinals will be a week from today, and then they will play likely Canada in that one.
Okay, someone said, why does soccer need to have so many leagues and cups? That's a great question. I don't know. I try to stay out of soccer business. All I know is the World Cup, and then every 2 years they have the, what is that, Europa? What was that a couple years ago that we were watching? I watched that. What was that?
That was the United States one? The one last summer at Arrowhead?
No, not that one. The one that had... I don't know. It was like the Copa America. That was like good.
Yeah, Copa America is basically like.
And then it was like the Euro champions
England,
or something.
Not England. Europe has their own version of Copa America. They call it the UEFA League. And
this
that's
is confusing. I'm starting. Yeah, you know what? If you don't like soccer, I'm starting to get you. It's just confusing. You know, we got football. We got two leagues. You either play college or pro. That's it. We don't have any other league for you to keep up with. This soccer, the way you're explaining it, it makes my head hurt. It's confusing. It's too much going on. It's the club, and then it's the Super Gold Cup, and this league, and this league. Hey, when do they start playing games at Arrowhead? That's what I want to know.
1 year from now. Arrowhead actually turned down games for the Club World Cup because of renovations.
Okay, I didn't
know. That's my understanding, at least.
I didn't know. I wasn't sure. It wasn't entirely there. I wasn't certain. I wanted to know what you were talking about. Can we talk a little bit about the NBA draft that is coming up later today? I would love to get your opinions on this. So I was watching a video game documentary a couple of days ago. And in this documentary, they were talking about the importance of the video game Mortal Kombat. Now, Rob, I don't know how much time you spent in an arcade back when you were around, but Mortal Kombat, when it first came out, would draw big crowds and big attention. People had never seen Mortal Kombat before. And you guys remember in Mortal Kombat, if you play video games, at the end, fatalities, the first time you saw one, how shocking it was. And back in the day, Rob, people would just kind of huddle around the arcade cabinet. And let's say that you had next up, you kind of put your quarters up there at the front, and that was kind of your sign to let everybody know, hey, I got next. Whoever loses, you hop off the sticks. It is now my turn. And if you win, you continue to play. And crowds would gather around. And I was thinking about that analogy in this context. There are athletes in sports that give us that same feeling, that make you want to hover around and watch them play. in the NFL. I would say that Patrick Mahomes is kind of one of those players that we see based on the ratings. People will come from around just to see him play quarterback because of the incredible things that he can do. I would say basketball has had that player for basically our entire life. Michael Jordan was that for us as a kid. Then that led into Kobe Bryant. Then that led into LeBron James and Steph Curry. Like, you remember the exact moment where you realize, hey, this kid on Davidson's actually really good. Rob, maybe you noticed it earlier than other people because he was on your side of the bracket in the NCAA tournament. But whenever you discovered Steph Curry, he gave you that same feeling. Hey, I want to see what happens to this kid. And then you remember he went back to Davidson for one more year, and he was the talk of the town. We've had that in college basketball. You and I wax poetically about Jimmer Fredette or this player or this player. Somebody who makes you gather around. The WNBA has that person right now in Caitlin Clark. We are very interested in Caitlin Clark. Even though she's no longer in college basketball and she is in the WNBA, there is concrete evidence that America will tune in to watch her play. I don't know if the NBA has that individual person right now the way that they usually have had. They've always had a Magic or a Bird or Mike or LeBron or Kareem. They've always kind of had that person. I think there are a lot of great players in the NBA. I don't know if there is a player right now that gives you that same feeling that you would huddle around the TV because you want to watch. I do wonder if Cooper Flagg has the ability to be that player. We're talking about someone who technically should just now be entering his freshman year of college. He reclassified last year, his freshman year at Duke. He was supposed to be a senior in high school. Now, I think we know now that him playing another year of high school basketball was not going to serve him at all. He'd average 40 points doing it. He needed to go to another level. He then went to Duke. He averaged 19.9, shot 48% from the field, and was the national player of the year and a consensus All-American. He made the right decision reclassifying and going to Duke. He is now taking the next step. If Cooper Flagg was from a foreign country, we would look at him as a basketball prodigy. He's been a pro probably for 2 or 3 years. The same way that Luka Doncic played in the EuroLeague when he was 14, 15, 16 years old, and then he came over to the United States and dominated at a really young age. I think Cooper Flagg likely could have done the exact same thing. This is probably the best American-born prospect that we've seen since Anthony Davis. Maybe you want to throw Zion in that conversation, but certainly since Anthony Davis. He's entering the NBA later today. So I do wonder with Cooper Flagg if he's going to be one of those players that people just want to see. Because the only other player I would say right now that's close to that in the NBA that could develop is Victor Wembanyama, where we're talking about 7'4", can shoot it, can do just about everything. I've seen him play in person before. He's an alien. I've never seen anything like Victor Wembanyama before. I went to his summer league game when he first came over. And he did something I'd never seen before. I saw him bat the ball up in the air like it was volleyball off a rebound and then catch it and alley-oop it to himself and dunk it. And everybody just looked around confused, like, what in the world did he just do? I think if the Spurs get really good and they're a team that makes a deep run, I think he'll be that player that gets people to huddle around and say, we've never seen a person like this. I don't think there's that American-born player, and I think the NBA kind of needs that. So I do wonder if Cooper Flagg, from America, went to a prominent college, has a lot of hype, is certainly going to be well-marketed in a top market in a very populated city. I do wonder if Cooper Flagg kind of has the ability, as the league has been looking for that quote-unquote face of the league, I do wonder if that player can be Cooper Flagg in 3, 4, 5 years or so.
I think the answer is no. And I think it's because of and Cowherd said this on his show, and I agree with him. Cooper Flagg's a great basketball player. And I watched a lot of him at Duke. You watched a lot of him at Duke. Do you know what makes him a great basketball player? He has a really high basketball IQ. He really does. He finds himself in the right spot at the right time. He just makes smart basketball plays. But you know what he doesn't do? Moments that pop up on Twitter. He's not the ooh moment on your TikTok feed. He's not the can you believe he just did that guy. He's just really, really good at basketball. And I wonder if that player can be a draw if the average night in the NBA, he's not popping. we talk about this with baseball all the time, how they struggle to have these social media moments. Actually, I think baseball's having one of them right now. The problem is it's a midday on the Wednesday between Mizorowski and Skeens. Like, they struggle to have these moments. Cooper Flagg, what's the biggest highlight from his time at Duke? What's the moment where you're like, oh, wow. Like, I can point to that moment with Zion. I can point to that moment with Kyrie in the NBA. Is another Duke guy. I can point to those wow moments other guys had early in their NBA career or in college that, hey, you were drawn to this guy because he did this thing. Anthony Davis was blocking every shot in college basketball. You were drawn to him because he was doing a thing. Cooper's Flagg thing is just being really good at basketball. It doesn't really translate to the social media digestible highlight era we live in.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. I do wonder, and I think this is actually a really positive thing, and it's maybe a little bit different than what you just said. I do think that Cooper Flagg is put into maybe the most unique situation that a first-round pick, a number one overall pick, has ever been in. I don't think we've ever seen a player of his caliber get drafted to a team, and he then instantly wasn't the best player on his team. Like, I do think that he will be allowed to develop and grow up in a way from a basketball perspective that I'm not really sure we've seen a lot of young players do. Like, I think it is noticeable. Now, I think you and I might be different because you and I would say, keep up with high school recruiting and high school basketball far more than the average basketball fan. People have been talking about Cooper Flagg since he was 13, 14 years old. Like, he has just kind of been, this is who he is, and this is how he's kind of come up in the game. It feels a lot like LaMelo Ball in that way, that you knew about LaMelo at a really young age, and then he made it to the league, and he kind of already had that built-in fan base. I feel like Cooper can be the exact same way. He just needs to be good and meaningful. LaMelo would be a tremendous star if he played on a team that actually did something and accomplished something. Like, I think people would gravitate towards him. I wonder if Cooper will be the same thing if they just simply play in meaningful games and he's just a really good player. Like, I wonder how much and how valuable that is for him, just him being in a good situation, him being good. But I can't think of too many times, certainly I would say in the post, maybe post 2010, that you were entering the league as a freshman, 18 years old, you averaged 19 and 10, and you were by far and away the best player in college basketball. We just haven't had many of those young players play.
Let me ask you this about Cooper Flagg. And I'm not trying to run him down. I actually think he's a really good basketball player. I remember on this show in November, December of last year, we talked about, is he worth the hype? Like, he's a great player, but he wasn't, oh, wow. He wasn't, you know, jaw-dropping. He wasn't, stop what you're doing because Cooper Flagg is playing Pitt. I mean, the former president of the United States went to Durham, North Carolina to watch Zion Williamson play basketball. That wasn't happening with Cooper Flagg last year. He was just solid. We have a whole year of highlights of Duke. He played in the Final Four, and none of those moments stand out. You're right. If he goes to Mavericks and he's likely to be the third option on the Mavericks, can he have those moments of the third option? Or if he's going to be a smart basketball player who averages 16 and 8 a night, but averaging 16 and 8 on a good team as a third option is not a draw for the casual fan. You have to be bigger. Maybe this is a hot take. I think DeBansta will have more hype at this time next year than Cooper Flagg has this year, because DeBansta, who's going to be at BYU, is going to have moments where he just dunks on a smaller kid and you go, oh, wow. He's going to, you know, send a shot, block it into the third row. You're going to go, ooh, can you believe that? He's going to have those eye-popping moments. And at this time next year, we're going to be talking about, oh, man, he has a chance to jump in the league and hit the ground running. Cooper Flagg just plays smart, fundamental basketball.
Can I throw this out there about AJ DeBansta? Maybe this comes off as hating. I don't think BYU is going to be that good this year. I feel like we do this in sports pretty – I feel like we do this fairly often. There's this team that kind of loads up on young players, loads up on high-rated guys, and we all get really excited about them, and then they start playing, and it's like, man, that team was just okay. Remember we were doing all this conversation about Rutgers last year? Rutgers could maybe have the number two and number three overall pick. I mean, they have the number two overall pick on their team. Dylan Harper is going to be drafted today to the San Antonio Spurs. They're going to have a top 10 pick in Ace Bailey. They missed the NCAA tournament last year. I feel like we've seen these kind of teams that just, hey, we're going to throw a lot of NIL money at this thing. We're going to grab this guy. We're going to grab this guy. We're going to put them on the court together. Everybody's going to want to see him, and it's going to be great. I got my questions on if this AJ DeBanster thing is actually going to work out the way that a lot of people think that it is. I mean, it's going to be fun, certainly, no question. The number one overall pick is in the Big 12. You'll see him play in the Big 12 tournament. You'll see him play at Allen Fieldhouse this year. There will certainly be reasons to be excited about him. I got my hesitation on if this is actually going to be a good experiment or not. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Ronnie Bell. He and a group of professional athletes from Kansas City are putting together a community event. We're going to talk to him about it next. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. We are very happy right now to be joined by Ronnie Bell. He went to Park Hill. He went to the University of Michigan. He is currently in the National Football League, plays for the Detroit Lions, and he is part of Winner's Circle as they are giving back to the community. And it is a group of professional athletes that have made the decision to give back. Ronnie, man, happy to have you on the show today.
Man, what's going on? Happy to be here.
Absolutely, man. Let's just start with this. For people who don't know, what is Winner's Circle?
Man, Winner's Circle is exactly what you said, man. We just trying to, everybody that grew up in Kansas City, all of us that are involved in it, for the most part, we all grew up, you know, playing either basketball or football with one another. And we've all been very fortunate enough to, you know, be able to still play and have a great career. And, you know, some of us in the NFL, some of us in the NBA, some of us are playing overseas. And so we all just got together and decided, you know, we wanted to do something for the city, something for the kids, you know, like the field days and the camps that we're having. And the biggest thing is really just kind of make it all about Kansas City, make it Kansas City's own thing. And, you know, that way, like, you know, the kids, because, you know, they look up to us, you feel me, because, you know, we're the older guys and we're playing the sport that they love and whatnot. But I feel like when we were all growing up, there was nothing really like this to kind of connect the kids with the guys that were professional athletes or had done it. So we all kind of got together and decided that's what we were going to make this about, and that was the biggest thing we were trying to make happen throughout, you know, whenever we came up with Winner's Circle.
You know, this thing is just very early on in this. You guys have only been doing it for 3 years. Where would you like to see this go? Where would you like to see your Winner's Circle project with all of these area athletes? How would you like to see it grow in the next 2, 3, 5 years or so?
So just continue to motivate the youth and get more and more guys in the NFL and in the NBA and the professional leagues and whatnot, and just make it even bigger. You know, I think this year, I know for sure we're a lot bigger than we were last year. I think we're up to like 10 to 12 guys, man. I mean, I just want, you know, have it to 20. Just have the whole city, you know, come out and support one another, and everybody just, you know, make it at the end of the day. Everybody get a piece of the pie.
Right now, we're talking to Ronnie Bell. He went to Park Hill High School here in Kansas City, went to the University of Michigan. Going to Park Hill, let me ask you this. What was a bigger rival? Was it Park Hill South, or Michigan, Ohio State?
Man, definitely Michigan and Ohio, man. Park Hill South wasn't much of a rivalry while I was in school. We was kicking their butt.
So we always like asking people like you this question who are from the area. When you were in high school and whenever in basketball or football you guys were going through the schedule, who was the school that you always felt like, all right, this is the automatic win? Who was that school for you when you were in high school?
Shoot. Man, it had to be Park Hill South. When we played Park Hill South in football, we knew we was trying to get the youngins in there and see if they could make some crazy plays, because we knew we was going to take care of business.
What was it like to play in Michigan Stadium? You know, there's some iconic stadiums. You think of the Horseshoe. You know, you've played there before. You think of the Big House in Michigan. You think of the Swamp down in Florida. Like, there are some iconic college football stadiums. What was it like to just go out there and you got 100,000 people every single Saturday as a Michigan Wolverine?
I about to say, it was just that, man. It was iconic. It was a blessing. And, I mean, it was super, super cool. I remember, shoot, my freshman year, very first game of my college career, we were playing at Notre Dame. And, I mean, just it was just surreal. And then, you know, we had, I think, I can't remember who we played first, but I just remember that first home game. I remember we had a camp practice that we let fans come to. And it was like maybe half the stadium was full, and it was crazy. So then once we got to the first game and the whole thing was full, I mean, it is just unbelievable the amount of people that get up in there and how excited they are to come and support Michigan football.
Yeah, I can definitely understand you as a kid that just had a bunch of football options. You know, you could have gone to a lot of different football schools. You could have went to a lot of different basketball schools. Like, you were just a really athletic kid. I can definitely understand when you get that call from Harbaugh and he tells you to come to Michigan and you think about the history and the tradition and all the kids that go there. I can see why you went there.
What's it called? I actually, man, Michigan was the only football scholarship I had coming out of high school, actually. I had all basketballs. So I got lucky. I wanted nothing to do but play football. So once Coach Harbaugh called my phone, yeah, it was absolutely a no-brainer.
It doesn't even make sense to me because I'm looking at your senior year. You had 89 catches, 1,600 yards, and 20 touchdowns. There wasn't a single college that wanted you to come play football for them?
I don't know how or why it played out like that, but I know God did exactly the way he wanted it to go because I ended up in Michigan, and, I mean, couldn't have been happier.
Right now, we're talking to Ronnie Bell for a few more minutes here, just taking a trip through his story. What was it like to hear your name called in the NFL draft?
Man, dream come true, dream come true. I mean, a lot of work went into that, a lot of work throughout college and shoot, after college, man, just being away from my family as long as I was and just training. And so to get that phone call, man, it meant everything for real because a lot of work went into that.
Two-part question. Who was the first player that you exchanged jerseys with for this upcoming season when you get the opportunity? Who is a player that you haven't yet exchanged jersey with that you want to?
The first player I exchanged jerseys with was Luke Schoonmaker, tight end for the Cowboys. Me and him played 4 or 5 years at Michigan together. So when we played the Cowboys, it was a no-brainer. We had to switch jerseys automatically. And then this year, me and J.J. McCarthy, my quarterback my last 2 years, we got to exchange jerseys when we play this year.
I guess two quarterback questions. What is it like to see J.J. healthy this year and looking to be the starter for the Vikings?
Absolutely, man. I'm excited for him, man. I'm excited for him to get out there and, you know, kind of – I mean, I know, but I want the rest of the world to see really what he's about and what he can do. I know he's going to ball out.
Your former quarterback, Brock Purdy, just got that big contract. I know you NFL guys are always happy to see when guys get rewarded. How rewarding is it to be a part of him signing that big-time contract extension?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was so happy for him. Nobody's more deserving, man. He works his butt off, and God dang, he's good. So I was really, really excited to see that once I seen it.
Last thing here, I know you don't know me well enough that you can do a favor for me, but can you bring Amon-Ra St. Brown to Kansas City just for 2 days, and I want you to show him around? I'm sure by now you've heard his comments. He's a teammate. He hasn't been to the Kansas City that you and I know. I want you to bring him to Kansas City and give him a proper tour of the city.
Yeah, absolutely. I gotta help him out. My young buck Jalen didn't do too good in that little interview. He did not hold it down the way I thought he was about to.
Yeah, because we were talking about this on the show. Kansas City is one of those things that, like, you know, just on Google and just like finding the places, you're not going to really get an accurate representation of what it's like to live here. But somebody like me that's lived here my whole life, you've lived here for most of your life, you and I know where to go and the spots that I can show an out-of-towner a good time. So Amon-Ra St. Brown, he has the wrong impression of Kansas City. It is an amazing place to live.
Yeah, I think, you know, he was only here for, you know, like he said, the draft, and I'm sure if they played KC, you know, they didn't really have no chance to actually get to see anything or do anything. You know, he's only here for such a short period of time, so he definitely just needs some help on pointers on where to be at.
Last thing, Ronnie, you are, you know, the NFL season is right around the corner. What personal goals do you have for yourself set this year as the football season here is get starting, what, 6-7 weeks or so?
I definitely just want to put together a solid season, you know, and I mean, shoot, my biggest personal goals is just continue to grow and get better and better and, shoot, just help the Lions in each and every way that I can, whether that's special teams, receiver, however I got to do it, but just be out there making plays and helping the Lions win games.
That is Ronnie Bell joining us on the show. He went to Park Hill. He went to the University of Michigan. He currently is in the National Football League playing for the Detroit Lions. You know, you're going to be back in Kansas City. The Chiefs and Lions play each other this year, man. Good luck this season, and congratulations to what you guys are doing in the community.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Rob, can we get somebody on from KU? There's actually a lot of recruiting questions we need to ask somebody from KU. Number one, you guys are doing, I mean, I guess you're doing okay in basketball. I mean, it makes sense. You got a lot of available spots and a lot of NIL money. I guess you guys have tradition or a good coach or, I mean, whatever. I mean, I see why you guys are doing all right, I guess, in recruiting. You guys couldn't offer Ronnie Bell a scholarship when he was dominating the Kansas City area? Whose fault is this? Who do we need to blame that you guys didn't offer Ronnie Bell a scholarship? He was the best football player in Missouri. Certainly on this side of state line. How come he didn't go to Kansas? What happened?
I mean, I imagine that feels like a David Beatty drop. That feels like prime.
He dropped
David
a lot when he was there.
By the way, where was Missouri? Where's Barry Odom on him? He said he had one football scholarship.
I mean,
Michigan.
I mean, to be fair, if there's one thing Missouri's actually done pretty well at in the last handful of years, I mean, they've done pretty well at wide receiver. I don't know if they need, certainly not as much as Kansas needed him. He went on to be a pretty productive player in Michigan. Got drafted into the NFL. That's a fumble by you guys. That's a fumble. All the grief Missouri takes. I mean, his senior year of high school, 90 catches, 1,600 yards, 21 touchdowns. You guys just didn't have no room for him? Nothing?
What year was he? What was his recruiting class?
Let me pull it up here. Hold on. I'm just looking at it.
I just want to blame the correct coach because there's a lot of blame.
I
want to
make sure you blame the right person, too. I want to make sure you blame the right person.
Harbaugh would have been in Michigan already, so that would have
2018.
Been 2018. Oh, that's right as Beatty got fired and Les Miles came in.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's both of them. Both
no,
of
you
them
know, yeah, that definitely seems like a player that fell through the cracks there.
Yep.
No, that's definitely a player that fell through the cracks. I mean, a really athletic family he came from. Congratulations to him. He is now on the Detroit Lions. He signed like a $1.2 million deal. Hopefully he has a big year with the Detroit Lions. Coming up at the top of the hour. So yesterday we did bold takes in the AFC. Let's now do it in the NFC. Oh, we got it. We actually, no. You know what? We're going to wait. My apologies. We're going to wait. We had a shift. Coming up, we are going to get ready for the NBA draft with our own draft. Keep it right here. It's the drive.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.